are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I know it's the off season, but it's a busy season for me, turning out these prospect pieces and stuff, getting them ready to go. So
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
They say all the time, nobody remembers who finishes second. No one remembers who has the best farm system for the longest amount of time. But everybody remembers who wins, especially when it's me, because I never let them forget it.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And I think with the Brewers kind of being fake contenders last year, fake contenders. You have to get your guys, and you have to know when to strike, because it's a good chance it might not be around. And
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, bro. It's been a while. I'm excited to get back on the mics. And I know it's the off season, but it's a busy season for me, turning out these prospect pieces and stuff, getting them ready to go. So I love the off season, though.
I love the off season, too. I wish it was more of an off season because, like you, I'm hard working behind the scenes trying to get things ready for kind of our next season relaunch, which is going to happen in January. I apologize to everybody that we haven't recorded in a couple weeks. Unfortunately, some life things happened for me, and we were unable to kind of get together. But I'm hoping that between all the podcasts, we will continue to record at least weekly rest of the way. So, and then, of course, starting in next year, we'll be going virtually every day up until the start of the regular season. So you have that to look forward to.
I think our off season work is strong, just as strong as our in season work. And I don't know, to change gears a little bit, if I could speak for you, I just want this Giancarlo Stanton stuff to be over.
As long as it ends up with my team getting him, I'm totally fine with that.
Or mine. But I just want it over one way or the other, because it's nobody knows anything. Everyone thinks they know everything, and it's just Twitter's a wasteland for that stuff.
Well, and I think you brought up a good point in our private chats and then on Twitter as well, is the teams that are attempting to be in on Stanton kind of will get their off seasons hijacked a little bit until decisions made on where he's going or if he's going.
Yeah, and there's another little wrinkle for it too. I mean, everyone knows, not to get too deep into this, but everyone knows like the Giants farm system isn't the best.
That's an understatement of the century.
So like my thought process that is, you know, if the Marlins are going to trade Stanton, they might as well trade everybody. Right? I mean, they might as well blow the whole thing up.
I think they will try, except for I think Ozuna and Yelich aren't going anywhere.
Well, I would deal those guys too.
I would too, but I don't think it's going to happen.
And then, you know, because then you look at the Giants farm system. The Giants farm system isn't enough to get Ozuna or Yelich. They don't have enough. Like, no. It's not possible. But the Cardinals do. So I kind of feel like if the Marlins are going to trade Stanton, it's not going to be to the Cardinals because they can get a ransom from the Cardinals for Ozuna or Yelich. And if they do trade Stanton to the Cardinals, it kind of takes one of the big players out of that market. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just don't think. The Marlins have made it pretty clear they're not going to move Ozuna or Yelich. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I think they should, because they can take that 30th-ranked farm system and put it in the top 10 with returns they'll get for all those guys. Real Muto, all those guys.
Yeah. But let's move on to kind of our topics of the day. This is going to be dynasty and prospect-centric. And we're going to start off with a dynasty topic, because you and I were both invited to a brand new industry league. It's a dynasty league. It's being put on by James Anderson of RotoWire. And it's called the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational. 20-team dynasty league, 5x5, 40-man rosters, I believe, and that includes you have to have 10 minor leaguers. And one of the interesting parts about this is how we're going to pick our draft slots. And it's kind of similar to Kentucky Derby style, where you can kind of pick your own draft slot, but you got to bid on them based on how many keepers you want for the next year. So if you bid five, you get five less keepers the next season. So, and it's only for one season that you lose the keepers, but
very similar to the TDGX format, if you're familiar with that.
So I wanted to talk about kind of what, you know, without giving away what you're planning on doing in that, but kind of give your kind of thought processes about where you would like to draft if you could. And then, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, kind of our strategies for, typical dynasty leagues. We don't have to give away anything in terms of what players we're going to be going after, because I know there are multiple people in this league that listen to this podcast, and I don't want to give away too much, but you and I both have different strategies when it comes to leagues like this, so I thought it'd be an interesting opportunity to kind of highlight our individual strategies, because I know there are a lot of dynasty leagues that start drafting super early, and people are getting prepped for those. So what are your thoughts on how you're going to approach this kind of the draft pick format?
Well, first and foremost, get this out of the way. This league is full of sharks, man.
Yes, it is.
Like, you're not going to outsmart guys. You're not going to get an advantage on a certain player because you think you know more. It's just not going to happen. I mean, you've got you in at number one. George Bissell, Chris Blessed. So I'm not going to read off everybody, but Ryan Bloomfield, J.P. Breen, Craig Goldstein from BP, Clay Link, Ralph Lifshitz, prospect guy over at Rasball, the Welsh from in this league and RotoWire, Rob Silver, won on FBC, Brett Sayer from BP. It's crazy, the names in this league.
Derek Van Riper, obviously, yep. James Anderson, Matt Modica.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Trudeau.
Matt Winkleman. I mean, it's a pretty amazing group of...
Melissa Lockhart, too. Forgot about her. Melissa Lockhart, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty great group of guys. But like you said, that means that you're not getting one over on people.
No, it's you. The prep for this is going to be insane. And I know this is going to be weird advice, but in a dynasty league, once you get past, I'd say the first 10 rounds, there's no reaches, man. You get who you want.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with guys and girls in this league, you have to get your guys and you have to know when to strike, because it's a good chance it might not be around. And as far as like the wrinkle with the bidding keeper spots on a on your draft slot, I think my plan going into this, not divulging too much information, is I don't want to be the high bidder, but I don't want to be the low bidder.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be closer to the high bidder than the low bid, but I also don't want to be crazy. And, you know, because what's the difference of first and second place between Mike Trout and Jose Altuve? And then you might lose like three extra players. You don't want to be that. You know what I mean?
So you want to be towards the top of the draft is what you're saying?
I want to pick in the top. My goal is probably top 6 to 8, or excuse me, top 1 to 8 is my goal. That's kind of where I want to sit. It's a 20-team league. I want to sit in the top half.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that, and I think I'm probably going to put a fair amount of draft picks on one of the top 3 or 4 spots.
Yeah.
And, I mean, one of the things, I was talking with Paul Martin on his podcast earlier today, and I told him, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, this is the year to draft towards the end of a draft in like 15.
Not in a league like this.
I don't think it is in any league, because, I mean, the elite talent is so deep coming into this season that I feel like you're, you know, in a 15-team league, if you draft first or second, you're going to get 3 elite players to start off your team. Whereas, you know, obviously if you're drafting towards the back, you're going to get 2 elite players, but then, you know, there's a real drop-off, I think, between, you know, picks 30 and 40. So I think in a league like this, I'm hoping that because people will reach for prospects and things like that, that I can get 3 elite players in my top 3 picks.
Yeah, and that's definitely the plan. I mean, and with talent spread out, it's going to be crazy, because it's hard to put a value on guys like, I don't know, give me Vlad Guerrero Jr. Not going to be in the big leagues this year.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you take him in a league like this?
Well, and see, I think that kind of plays into the strategy of a league like this, because, you have the propensity to draft youth in leagues like this, correct?
But there's another added wrinkle I'm going to get to, but go ahead. Mm-hmm. Keep with your point.
Well, where I have the propensity to do the exact opposite, I tend to draft, and what I will probably end up doing for this is drafting it like it's a redraft league, and going for it all in the first year, because they say all the time, nobody remembers who finishes second, no one remembers, you know, who has the best farm system for the longest amount of time, but everybody remembers who wins, especially when it's me, because I never let them forget it.
It's got to be that way.
Exactly, and I'm going to bank that there are a number of guys in this group that are prospect guys or really, really into prospects, that prospects are going to go way too high, way too early. And I'm going to get a bunch of, you know, I'm going to have the oldest team in the league, but it's going to be the best looking team, in my opinion, for 2018.
And here's the added wrinkle I wanted to get to. Like, there is no real advantage to just loading up and taking prospects right off the gate, because it's important to look at. If you look at one of the league specs, the bottom three, or the, excuse me, the there's a draft lottery for the last three teams. So you're not guaranteed to get, you know, the first pick next year. And it doesn't snake. This draft does not snake. So first round is first pick in every round, not, you know, first and 20, not the, there's no turn.
Mm-hmm. You mean for the rookie drafts?
No, that's for everything, man.
Even for this initial draft?
Initial draft is not a, that's why we're doing the invisible hand.
Because
it's not fair, random. He doesn't want to do random because there's no snake, so... You know, and another important thing is, too, there's no, you know, say I go crazy and I bid 15 keeper spots for the number one pick and the second highest bid is 7. There's no victory system. I just lose 8 players. Like, so it's intense.
Yeah, and well, I mean, that's, to me, one of the reasons why I'm really interested in making just a huge push for the first year. One, because I've been a part of a ton of dynasty leagues that have folded after 2 or 3 seasons. You know?
And you can't, and you have to fill out a roster spot. If you don't have enough spots in your roster, there's a possibility of getting booted from the league.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you can't really load up on young prospects and just kind of sit and relax. It's the goal is to be competitive throughout the whole time, and this league is going to be outstanding, and I can't wait for it to start. There's a lot of uncertainty going in, but I think we're kind of all in that same boat. So it'll be fun talking strategy, and we'll definitely keep you guys updated throughout, because, you know, it'll be something that's worth following, I think, just because, you know, you got 19 very smart people and myself, so we can get different strategies going forward and different ways to evaluate all these players, and it's going to be really fun.
And what we'll do is we'll definitely make sure we try to get every single person who's in this league on the podcast at some
100%.
Point.
Yeah.
To kind of talk about their strategy.
Most have already been on once or twice, at least.
Yeah, I'd say at least half, if not more, of the people have been on the podcast at least once. So, but we'll definitely get everybody on to kind of break down how they approach dynasty leagues, because, you know, dynasty is a different animal, and just because I don't change my strategy doesn't mean you won't want to change yours, you know, based on how you're doing. Doing a draft, so it's a really interesting, especially with how deep it is. 20 teams, 40 man rosters. We keep 35 players from year to year, so you're pretty much you're keeping your virtual entire roster unless you do
this
something
first draft
crazy.
Is
yeah,
because so you're only throwing 5 players back hypothetically.
Well, and if you bid a ton, like let's say you bid, you know, 10 or 15 keeper spots.
Mm-hmm.
On, you know, pick 1 or 2 or something like that, then you're in a position where you are drafting the majority of your teams after everybody else has drafted theirs.
Yeah.
Next season. So you're pretty much punting the entire, you know, 2019 to try to win in 2018.
And another, like, I guess a little added thing, since it's 40-man rosters, you keep 35, you pretty much have to bid at least 5. It doesn't make sense not to, right?
I would say so, but I mean, I think there will be, my guess is a third of the people don't bid anything.
I think so, because I mean, Yeah, that's kind of – we look back at TGGX, and I apologize. I don't know the correct number, but a lot of teams didn't even bid.
Yeah. I've got it up right now, so I could find it pretty quick. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of the 20 teams didn't bid anything. They just went for the random draw.
I expect it to be similar this time around.
Mm-hmm. And the most amount of keepers paid in that league were two people paid 15 keepers.
And you know what's interesting with that is I was talking to a couple guys in that league. That team obviously has Mike Trout. It's also had like three different owners since the league started because they put such a hole. You know what I mean? It's hard to
– Yeah, it's a hard thing to build yourself out of.
So, yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about the players that we've got kind of set up for this podcast. Like I said, it's going to be prospect-focused, but we're going to talk about guys – who should have some sort of 2018 impact. And let's start out with Francisco Mejia, who made his major league debut towards the end of 2017, got 14 plate appearances, batted 145, 214, 154. But in Triple A or in Double A, hit 14 home runs, stole 7 bases, hit 297, 346, 490. What are your thoughts on Mejia coming into 2018?
Well, Mejia just wrapped up his season because they sent him to the Fall League. He didn't obviously play in the postseason for the Indians, but they moved him to the Fall League, and he played there, but he did a lot of playing. He played second base and played some third base and caught a little bit out there. So I guess, you know, from the outside of it, you might look at that as like, oh, cool, it might get some pick up some dual eligibility. But for me, I'm actually concerned because once a catching prospects start kind of sniffing around in other positions, very rarely do they keep catcher eligibility long term. It just never really works out that way. I like Mejia's bat. The catching skills are very good. The raw skills, like he's very good. The arm is one of the best in the minor leagues. And the receiving skills, while they show promise, are a little bit rough. He's like a piece of clay that needs to be molded. He's got the shape. He just needs the finer touches. And the Indians are an organization that puts extreme value on catcher defense. Obviously, they put up with Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez tandem in the last couple of years, and they both struggled to hit over 200, really. So they don't really prioritize offensively for the catchers, and Mejia would be the guy to do that. I think he's most famous for probably that 50-game hitting streak. He was almost traded, if you remember correctly, too, for Jonathan Lucroy, but Lucroy vetoed that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're obviously not completely sold on him. They almost traded him, and then obviously they're moving him around out of the position. But as a matter of fact, interesting wrinkle going into next season. Not that he's a big player in a redraft that you want to draft, but he's not even catcher eligible. He's going to be utility only.
Well, it depends on what site, because most sites, if he didn't get 20 games or whatever the threshold is, will revert back to whatever his original designation is. Some will, on the other hand, give him whatever he had the most of. And unfortunately, that would be DH, because he played 2 games at DH and 1 game at catcher. And then the rest were either pinch hitters or pinch runner.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just think of Mejia, like you said, the hit tools plus. But that's the only plus tool in the bag for us fantasy purposes. The power isn't going to be great. I think he probably tops out about 15, 17 homers. But I do think he needs to stick behind the plate to carry a lot of value, because a bat like that playing second or third isn't all that special. Mm-hmm. And he's going to – it's not a good thing in my eyes that he's messing around at these other positions, because it's kind of showing that the Indians – I don't want to say giving up on him as a catcher, because obviously they're not doing that, but they are developing an escape route. You know what I'm saying? And
for me, it puts them in a position where – where does he play? Because catcher seems like one, the easiest path to playing time because you're only blocked by Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. I mean, unless they're going to put him out in the outfield where you've got Michael Brantley, who's always hurt, or Alani Chisenhall. I mean, third's occupied.
Kipnitz is in the outfield now, too.
Yeah. Sounds like. But, I mean, that was a mistake. And
yeah,
they learned that – hopefully they learned that lesson watching him actually play out there because he was just absolutely atrocious out there. So, I mean, and you have Bradley Zimmer who can play center. There's no reason to move Kipnis back out there. So, for me, it's like the only real path to full-time playing time is behind the plate. So, to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense that they're going to mess around with him too much at other positions. But they are, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. For me, in terms of fantasy, in a redraft league, there's no way I'm touching him this year. In a dynasty or keeper league, I'm probably staying away too because I've just never been.
I'm not a catch prospect guy. Period.
Yeah, I'm not either. And you know, you and I have talked a lot about that. To me, it's like he's got the upside of JT Realmuto, which is great upside at catcher and fantastic, but he's also got the downside of not being a catcher. And then he's what, like Melky Cabrera-esque? You know, it's like that's
cop,
not super interesting.
But I think if he sticks at catcher, which I still think he does, but I just don't like this that they're messing with it. I still think he's ultimately top six catcher. I mean, just because the position is so bad.
Yeah, for
sure. But he has to stick there, and I think he does, but it might not be in Cleveland. Ultimately, I think he gets moved, but it'll probably be in 2 years when he's kind of floated around as a backup, and you know, kind of like the Cardinals are doing with Carson Kelly. Not the type of player, not the same type of player, but I think the value for Kelly will be diminished by the time he gets moved, and you know what I mean. So
let's move on to talk about Victor Robles, another guy who was at Arizona Fall League. Had some, you know, played well in Arizona, but also had some disciplinary issues where he didn't seem to be putting in a ton of effort and got benched and I think pulled from a start. You know, played at the major league level, didn't have any home runs or stolen bases at the majors, but did hit 250 in a really, really short sample. Hit 324, 394, 489 with three home runs and 11 stolen bases at Double-A. Hit seven home runs and 16 stolen bases at High A earlier in the year too. So that's a 10 and 27 line between two levels. What are your thoughts on Robles for next year?
I think not to pound this. I found out her name's actually, it's pronounced Robles.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's not Robles. I thought it was. It's Victor Robles, which is, I guess, fine. But anyways, I think, you know, I'm kind of bummed that the Nationals decided they kept rolling out the corpse of Jason Worth toward the end of the season. And I think it bit him in the playoffs. Because I think Robles is a type of player that, because, you know, with Adam Eaton coming back, I think you could stick him in left field and probably get slightly below average offensive production next year. But when you add in the defense and the speed, probably be slightly above average player next year. And the crazy part about that is he's only 20 years old. But like I said, I don't think there's any reason to rush him. I think he starts in AAA. I think that's slam dunk. He starts in AAA. And he'll eventually make it up to Washington pretty quickly because, you know, they got probably Michael Taylor probably did enough to earn that left field job for now. And Harper, obviously, and Adam Eaton returning. But also endangered, you know, because with Harper potentially leaving, Robles could be a potential trade chip for them to boost or something at the deadline because – they're probably going all in this year, you know what I'm saying, for the Nationals.
Mm-hmm. As they should.
As they should. And I think Robles might be a guy that they ended up moving for that. But, I mean, he's looking at a guy here, plus hit tool, above average speed. I don't want to call it plus because he doesn't really – I don't think he's going to translate it to the big stolen base totals that we need for fantasy. But I think he's still going to hover around 20, which in this day is pretty nice. But – you know, I think the plus stolen base totals are guys like Hamilton and D. Gordon and all that. But so he's going to do that, but he's going to hit for average power, I think, eventually. It won't be right away. I think he's a Starling Marte type. I think that's a decent comp to expect out of this guy. He's extremely young, like I said. You're in it for the long haul with Robles now. Good OBP. He's a little bit aggressive, but it's you know, he's a guy with controlled aggression that he swings a good pitch. He's an intelligent hitter, well beyond his years. He's a slam dunk top five prospect in the game for me. I think by when I'm all said and done, I think he's going to be ranked third for me behind Acuna and Vlad Guerrero. So I think he's going to be number three. Right up there with him and Eloy Jimenez for me are kind of a toss-up. I guess it's – I don't want to say roster construction because, you know, those two prospects like that. But I guess it depends on what flavor you like better, the speed contact guy or the monster power guy. But, I mean, Robles is a guy, like I said, probably what? I bet you he gets about 300 plate appearances in the bigs this year. And he's a guy who, as soon as he gets picked up, you got to go all in on him. And he's going to get drafted in redraft leagues too, as he should. If you have a big enough league and can stash him, you should do it.
Yeah, I don't think I would take a shot on him in redraft leagues. I think
I wouldn't either because it's a dead rat. I don't play in leagues that are deep enough like that to do that.
I do, but I also, you know, I mean, his playing time is completely dependent on Michael Taylor and how well Taylor does. And, you know, I mean, obviously Adam Eaton, how healthy he is coming back. But everything I've seen from Eaton looks like he's ready to go. So I don't think Eaton's going to be an issue. But Michael Taylor will be the kind of the deciding factor. And Taylor was very good last year. Hit 271, 320, 46 with 19 home runs and 17 stolen bases in 118 games. And, I mean, unless Taylor really regresses back to the guy he's been in 2016 and 2015, where he's hit, you know, below 235, then I don't see where Robles comes in and plays full time. And I think you're right. I think he could end up being a trade chip. And how much value does he lose going to a worse situation in terms of the team around him? Because I think a lot of what will, you know, bust up Robles' value for this year, you know, in a first full season at the majors or a first large season at the majors, because it won't most likely be full, is the team around him, the amount of the counting categories he can rack up in runs and RBIs on top of the stolen bases and in a few home runs, because I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power right away or anything like that. So I just don't see there's a ton of upside there for this season. I think long term he's going to be a stud. I do agree he's a top, you know, 5 to 7 prospect in the game, but I'm not going to bank on him being great right away like a Bellinger or Hoskins or someone like that.
I do think it's extremely beneficial that Dusty Baker is no longer the manager there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Dusty, everyone knows, famously doesn't play rookies. And I think ultimately that might have been, I mean, you talking about how close that Cubs National Series was, that might have been the difference in the series if they played Robles over Worth.
Well, if they had not batted Worth second for no apparent reason, that, I mean, that might have been the difference too.
Worth is a statue in the outfield, and he had a lot of big at-bats where he came up. I'm not blaming the loss of the series on him, but I guess I kind of am. Big at-bats, and he was striking out, not even making contact, not even moving the runners. But, I mean, it's interesting too. We were talking about a little bit before the show about the steamer projections and stuff. Steamer projection for Robles falls right in line with what I kind of said earlier, with a slightly below average bat, but when you factor in everything else, it'll be an above average contributor. 272, 324 OBP, 407 slug. They only have him penciled in for 140 plate appearances, but in those 140 plate appearances, they have 3 homers and 6 stolen bases.
If you double that to 300, you believe that's 12. Where he's going to get, is 6 and 12. How interesting is that even in a 15-team league or even in NL only for the most part?
Well, what you're saying is correct. I do think in NL only leagues, he's going to be kind of a poison pill because you're going to draft and hold him, but for what?
And you're going to have to hold him and not be accruing stats either from that spot or have to hold a reserve spot. Until he's actually playing, and then he could be one of those guys that's worked in slowly, you know, that's not playing 4 or 5 times a week, that, you know, starts off playing, you know, twice a week and pinch running here and or defensive replacement here. But I don't see where there's upside because he's got great tools, but mm-hmm. I think the realistic ceiling for a guy like that this year is a 10-20 season. And there are plenty of guys who can give you that.
Yeah, and, you know, I absorb. I'm like a sponge. I read every single prospect thing I can find, and, you know, you put it all together and formulated opinions, and, you know, the we're at Fangraphs to do the – I'm going to butcher the hell out of this.
Eric Loganangan?
The Mahalanobis comps, mm-hmm. where they use Cato and actual war, you know, and for Robles, when he came up, it was an interesting guy to look at, because a lot of the guys that come up, you don't recognize a lot of the names on that list. For this one, you got, you know, Ruben Mateo. Remember, he was a stud prospect coming up, didn't really pan out. He's the number one comp. Go down, Andrew McCutcheon's on this list, Carlos Gomez, Carl Crawford. And that's the type of player this guy's going to be. So keep that in mind. I think McCutcheon's the absolute bullish result on the power. But I think other – you knock the power down a touch, and I think he could be McCutcheon for a few years. And yep. And I think that's definitely a player. Obviously, he's owned in any dynasty format out there. And if he's not, like, he's going to be an interesting guy to see where he goes in our league we're starting up this year.
He's going to be one of those guys that goes way too high.
Yeah, because he's not going to make much of an impact this season. You're right. But
I bet you he goes in the first two rounds.
Oh, no way. Really?
Top 40? When we did the
Friends of... I'm forgetting it's 20 teams. I forget it's 20. Yeah.
When we did the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, that I think it was drafted in, like, around this time in 2014.
Buxton. I took Buxton.
Yeah, Buxton went in, what, the third round?
Yep, third round in a 15-teamer, right?
Yeah. No, it's a 20-teamer. I'd say he goes in the top 50. He's going to go somewhere in the mid to early third round, and it will not be me.
It won't be me that early either. And it's funny you see Buxton, you know, if I still owned him in that league, which I don't, I'd finally just be reaping the rewards now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's the thing with prospects, and one of the reasons why, you know, I talk about one of the reasons I go with the strategies I do for dynasty leagues is. You just don't know how long guys are going to take to develop. You know, our good buddy Paul Spohr, you know, screams about it all the time in the Sleeper in the Bus podcast. You know, prospect growth isn't linear. You're not going to be able to just project, well, by this time, this guy is going to do this. Or, oh, this guy did this in his first full season. You know, that's why, for me, the insanity of the Rhys Hoskins love is just insane, because people are going, well, in 200 plate appearances, he had 18 home runs. So, I mean, this is a guy who could legitimately hit 60 home runs.
Triplet,
it doesn't work like that. Like,
triplet. He's John Carlos Stanton.
Mm-hmm, you know, and so, like, people are going to – but people do it all the time. And prospect guys, smart guys in the industry will do it because, I mean, you know, Rhys Hoskins had an ADP of around 35 in those mock drafts I put together this year. And that's insane.
That's industry people, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. It's intelligent people who do this either for a living or on the side. You know, our very own Chuck Anderson was one of them. You know, but it's insane to do that.
We talked about this earlier. I mean, Edwin Encarnacion or Rhys Hoskins next year. We both said E5, and we were both in the minority in our
like, and it shouldn't be close. You know, I was talking about this exact thing with Paul Martin earlier today. And I told him, I was like, at the end of the day, they both have around a similar ceiling, you know, but I feel pretty sure that E5 is going to get there.
Oh, like, he's one of those players you can write down in blood
exactly.
Right now what he's going to do.
And,
yeah.
Like, what are you really projecting Hoskins for? Maybe, you know, at best, you're not going to project him for more than 40 home runs. I mean, you're going to project him for a lower average more than likely on a worse team.
Yep.
You know, so being like, I don't understand, it just ages him. That's why E5's going behind him.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about another top prospect and a guy that is getting just a ton of helium, and that's Ronald Acuna of the Braves, another guy who was at Arizona Fall League and hit very, very well there.
MVP of the Fall League.
And between... three levels this year, he had 21 home runs and yep. stole, well, God, what?
44 bases?
44 bases.
Well, it's not 20 times, though.
But, I mean, that's, you know, and here's the thing. Getting comps to Mike Trout. So, Matt, is this the next Mike Trout?
No, there's no next Mike Trout. It's impossible. But there's a certain prospect, I'm not going to tell you who, you've probably already read it in one of my previews, that has Mike Trout-like tools that we'll get into later. I think actually Acuna, at his age, makes more contact than Mike Trout did. Trout, you know, but strikeouts are whatever nowadays. Who cares? But Acuna right now, for me, man, is 70 raw power, which is near top of the scale. Keep in mind, he hit in AAA 221 at-bats, 344, 393, 548. He's 19. And he's going to be 19 till December, the end of the middle of December. So the kid is amazing. Everything he did this year, Mike and I were talking about him about a year and a half ago in the FWFB prospect pods, and we were aggressive on him a little bit, but we were nowhere near this, and I don't think anybody was. But he's the clear-cut consensus top prospect in the game right now. There's no argument for anyone else over him. I think me and you differ on this. I think he's up in the first 2 weeks of the season. I think they do it kind of like Chris Bryant, the Cubs. I think that's how the Braves handle this, because I think the Braves see a wild card window now, especially with Anthopoulos coming on the scene. They're going to have to go for it because the fan base, they're about to lose a big name international prospect or two, where they kind of look embarrassed with the way the front office was from the top down, pretty much caught cheating, which is every team does it, but they just happen to get caught. And, you know, so I think the Braves are going to kind of put the pedal down. I wouldn't be surprised if they sign a free agent or two this offseason and pencil Acuna into the starting right field or left field job, depending on who they can get rid of, Markakis or Kemp, and let him go. And I think he's going to be the odds-on favorite for the Rookie of the Year and everything like that, as he should be. But I think he's got 20-20 upside right out of the gate.
And I don't disagree if he gets one of those jobs that quickly that he doesn't have a huge upside. And, you know, I was just part of a magazine mock. And spoiler alert, those of you who buy magazines, there's a reason why a lot of the comments sometimes can be a little bit vague, because we do these mock drafts for these magazines before the turn of the new year. I just did it, and I took Acuna. But I got him at pick like 180 something.
Oh, cow. I just did a mock draft now with Ralph Lifshitz on Couch Managers with a bunch of guys, and his prospect in dynasty leagues and stuff. He's going off the board about pick 100.
Yeah, and see, that's insane to me, because I don't think there's any way. I know you think he comes up really early. I don't see why the Braves would start his clock like that. It just doesn't make any sense. He's extremely young. They aren't a team that is going to be competing this year. I know he is an advanced hitter, and he dominated in his short stint in AAA. But I would guess they keep him, you know, down until at least Memorial Day. And I still think he could have a huge impact rest of the way from, you know, beginning of June on. And do a 2020 type season in 3 or 4 months, but I don't buy that you're going to be getting him 2 or 3 weeks into the season for your fantasy teams. That being said, the upside is so great, and the approach in the bat is so polished and major league ready at this point that he's worth the chance on. You know, if you can get him outside of the top 150. I'm not going to pay a top 100 price on him. I think you need him, especially in deeper formats, 15-team formats, things like that. You need someone to produce right away if you're taking him in the top 100, unless they're going to turn out to be a Judge or a Bellinger. And I just don't necessarily – I'm not going to bet on that.
Judge's ADP was well over 300 this year, and so was Bellinger's. So,
yeah. And rightfully so. But that's how you win leagues right there, is you get those guys, you know, that you didn't have to pay anything for to produce, like, you know, first, second, third round values. There just isn't enough profit to be made, considering there is a realistic chance. I mean, like, do I think it's going to happen? No. But would it be 100% shocking if the Braves just said, we're going to keep him down till September? There's no reason to bring him up. He's only 19 years old. He's going to be 20 by the start of the season.
I think that could happen if they have an absolutely disastrous first 2 weeks.
Sure. I mean, and there's no reason to think that this team is going to be any good.
I think they're going to try to be.
And I would love to see them do that. But, I mean, you're still talking about a team that is employing Nick Markakis, Tyler Flowers. I don't even know who this third baseman is that they've got.
Adonis Garcia.
No.
Camargo.
Yeah, Camargo. Like, I have no
idea
who that is.
Utility guy that flashed a little bit this year. He's not a true talent starting as third baseman, that's for sure. So, I think they up there somewhere, though. I wouldn't be surprised if they made a run at Moustakas. I wouldn't be surprised if they got involved in a Josh Donaldson trade.
Yeah. But the it's also a team that's got a very shaky rotation, what is Sean Newcomb going
to
be?
They've also been rumored to be with Jake Arrieta. So, I mean, they're kind of floated around in a lot of things.
So, I don't think it's a team that's going to be competing this year. I think it's a team that's going to be, probably start competing in 2019. And I think there's no real reason for them to bring Acuña up really at all, much less in the first 2 weeks of the season. I think, like I said, at the earliest, he's looking at a Memorial Day call-up. Get more service time for him, and save some money in the long term, And so for me, yeah, take the shot on him after pick 150, but I'm not taking him in the top 100, and that's where he's going to go in a lot of leagues. We saw, if you followed any of the drafts,
I'm trying to find your Turley Mox, what was around pick 100 ADP? I'm trying to find what outfielders were going around there.
Give me a sec, and I will bring it up for you.
Because I think that's interesting to debate. Who would you rather have between those guys? Because I saw him going about pick 100, 110, in that range. So I want to see.
So would you rather have Acuña or Kevin Kiermaier, who is at an ADP of 129.5?
See, I think I'd roll the dice and go with Acuña because I don't trust Kiermaier to stay healthy.
Okay, would you rather have Acuña or Ian Desmond?
I'll roll the dice and go Acuña.
See, I'm going to take Desmond there, and I think I'm going to take Kiermaier too. Would you rather have Ian Happ or Acuña?
I'm a big Ian Happ guy. I just don't see where he plays. I got to go Acuña.
I think that's a spot where I'd probably go Happ, but I can see the argument. I mean, and Acuña had an ADP of 142 in those mock drafts.
Yeah, so that's
Bradley Zimmer or Acuña? My boy, Bradley Zimmer.
I'm going Zimmer on that just because I think the stolen base upside is elite.
Yep, I'm with you there. All right, last one. I'm gonna go higher. Would you rather have? Oh, my boy, Michael Conforto.
I really, really love what Conforto did last year. I'm gonna have to go Conforto, but that's like making me pick between two of my kids. So.
Yeah, no, me too. But it's Conforto for me as well. So. If you can get, like I said, if you can get him after 150, I feel really good about it. If you're getting him in the top 100, I'm not feeling great about that at all.
I think a good way to, I agree with you with what you're saying. I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
I think a good expectation for Acuña as soon as he gets called up is to prorate Lorenzo Cain's stats for this year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that would be a really good comp. It just, for me, it's a matter of,
I think ultimately he's got more power long term, but he's only 19. So for the rest of this year, you got to prorate where Lorenzo Cain is and kind of, go from there.
And I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes down to when you think he's being called up. If you buy what Matt is saying in terms of, he thinks he's going to be up early. Ralph Lifshitz, another guy on the bandwagon of, he's going to be up early. James Anderson from RotoWire, same way. But then go ahead and pull the trigger. go get your guy and hope for the best. For me, I play it a little bit safer. I'm going to take the guaranteed production from some of those other guys and take the chance that the Braves say, we're not going to win right now, so let's not worry about, you know, starting his service clock and let's hold him down for a little while longer, you know, especially if they have trouble moving guys like Markakis and Kemp, because, you know, I don't think the market's going to be very flush for those guys either.
No, I could see Matt Kemp ending up in San Francisco after Stanton goes to St. Louis. So
don't say that.
No. But like, on a serious note, like, back to Lorenzo Cain. Where's Lorenzo Cain's ADP? If you still have that open.
Oh, that's going to be much higher, Cain.
No, I know that. Yeah, I'm just saying. That's basically based on ability.
88.5.
Okay, so in a 12-team league, that is what, round?
Seven.
Seven? I think seven, that's perfect. Eight, yeah. For. That's kind of where like Yoan Moncada went going into this season.
Mm-hmm.
This past season. I think they're similar values there, and obviously that didn't work out for Moncada owners just because it took so long for him to come up. But I think this situation is different, but I think that's the type of talent you're looking at is Lorenzo Cain.
And I think that's a really good point to bring up, though, because, you know, I took Moncada in our FWFB staff league, and I got nothing out of him. Now, I got him super late. Like, I got him after pick 200, and so that pain wasn't felt as harshly as it would have been had I taken him in the top 100. And that's the risk-reward factor you're going with. And I think sometimes, you know, we saw this, you know, a few years ago when Correa came up and was just so fantastic, you know, in his short sample size when he first came up, that everybody went not only kind of gaga over him, but also went gaga over a ton of other prospects who hadn't yet made it to the show the next year. And there were people who were really disappointed because they're like, oh man, this random prospect didn't hit or didn't pitch well right away. And I think we tend to forget that not all these guys hit or, you know, or are fantastic right away. Sometimes it takes them some time to figure things out, you know, and, you know,
like Trout stunk it up his first go around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, but like you said, Byron Buxton, you know, you drafted him in 2014, and he's just now starting to pay off. You know, Aaron Hicks was supposed to be like the Byron Buxton of his time, and he's now just starting to pay off like 7 years later. So, I mean, you know, Mike Moustakas was, you know, a top-tier prospect. It took him a long time to kind of figure things out. And you know, and so, you know, for every guy that is, you know, straight fire right away, there's three or four guys that take a long time to figure it out, and a lot of them never figure it out. You know, Appel was just DFA'd earlier today.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about your boy Alex Reyes, who is going to be pitching in the major leagues at some point this year. He's going to start off in the bullpen. The question becomes, where would you take him in drafts?
See, I think a guy with his kind of big name, I don't think there's going to be a discount at the draft table. So I probably won't end up with him in a lot of places this year. But I also could see it going the other way. I could also see where he's discounted so far just because he's not going to start right away. But the Cardinals do this a lot. I mean, if you remember, Adam Wainwright, Matt Morris back in the day when he came back from Tommy John, Adam Wainwright was the closer in a World Series team. I hate, and biggest pet peeve ever, too, is when you get dipshit announcers on the still talk about Adam Wainwright as a former closer. No. He was a starting pitcher his whole, you know what I mean, up until that point. And then, you know, Carlos Martinez is the prime example of this as well. They left Martinez in the bullpen for a couple of years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Reyes has a rotation spot waiting for him when he gets back. But ultimately, too, the thing to watch here, he's probably not going to be, you know, with the team until at least the beginning of May. And then they're going to put him in the bullpen. So then after he gets in the bullpen for, what, a month or so, they're going to have to send him back down again if they're going to want him to start, to stretch him back out. So it might be a lost season from the fantasy standpoint for Reyes, but he's the upside is so high And I think in the land of like Chris Davinsky's and stuff like that, you're going to be enticed to take a shot on Reyes. But I don't see the Cardinals letting him work multiple innings more than twice a week just because he's coming back from Tommy John. He's not going to be as rubber-armed as Davinsky, where he's going to be – Davinsky pretty much is a start and a half a week of ridiculous premium value. I don't think you're going to get that from Reyes because, like I said, they're going to be extra cautious with him. I mean, he's 23. I mean, why wouldn't you be? Obviously, with the health concerns and everything. That's assuming he bounces back fine, which there's no guarantee either. But he's on schedule. He's already throwing, not off a mound yet, but I know he's playing catch and everything. Actually, I take that back. He did throw a bullpen session a couple weeks ago, actually. So he's going to be up. It should be pretty much a normal spring training, but they're telling him that he's going to be down right away to kind of, you know, no matter how good or bad you do, this is the plan. Stick to it. The Cardinals will 100% stick to that plan. There will be no deviation. They want to keep him away from Mike. I'm just kidding. But, you know, he's a guy. I love him long term. And plus, he might end up in Miami if the Stanton stuff gets way out of control, which I don't think he will, because I don't think with that much money involved, you have to give up a Reyes. He's still the top pitching prospect in the game for me. It's close to him and Kopech. But for this year, I think I'd still rather have Reyes over Kopech, but they're close.
Yeah, I think I'd rather – ooh, that's hard.
Because Kopech, I think, with the White Sox being in a position, I don't think he comes up till September. There's no reason for that.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he could come up earlier, but I think you're right. I think there is a downside that they may just decide, yeah, let's not even, you know, because they're definitely not competing.
No.
There's no illusions that, of like the Braves, that, hey, maybe the Braves – you know, start out hot and go, let's try and see if we can get all hands on deck and, you know, make the playoffs this early in a rebuild. There's no illusion for that for the White Sox. So,
no.
They may decide that Kopech, you know, can just stay in the minor leagues and continue to work on his command in the minor leagues while not having to start the service clock. I think that Kopech's upside is just so much greater because I think on top of the concerns about Reyes starting off in the bullpen and then probably, like you mentioned, having to go back down at some point to get stretched out as a starter and then come back. I mean, there's going to obviously be a limited workload, you know, in terms of total innings. And so if you're blowing some of that in the minor leagues and some of that, at the major leagues as – a reliever, I think that you're blowing a lot of your ceiling capital for a guy like Reyes. I love him long term, and I think he is kind of an unappreciated asset in terms of dynasty leagues right now because he's coming off of the injury.
Yeah.
So he is a guy I go out and buy, especially if I'm not looking to compete next year. But in terms of my 2018 like redraft ranks, he's not going to be in my top 200, and it's just. I think there's just too much. There isn't enough ceiling, capital for the investment. If I'm going to go for an upside pick, give me a guy like you mentioned, like Kopech, like a Walker Buehler, or someone like that, that I think could at some point crack the rotation if things go right or if things go wrong for a team and they're just forced into it, and just be excellent right away. So. Like I said, love Reyes long term, short term, not buying it.
And like you said, the Cardinals are a team that have plenty of options also. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might be some, they're going to make a trade this offseason for somebody, so they're going to lose some of these guys. But you look, talking about Reyes, talk about Jack Flaherty, who was up last year, didn't impress, but I mean, it's his debut, so you take it for what it's worth there.
Luke Weaver looked great.
Luke Weaver looked great.
They're not going to kick Adam Wainwright out of the rotation.
I wish they would.
Michael Wacha showed flashes of the player he once
obviously
was.
Obviously, Carlos Martinez is a frontline guy. Sandy Alcantara is a nice upside guy. I think he's going to pitch out of the bullpen this year, but he's a guy that could start. Dakota Hudson's a nice starter, too, that could get some innings. They're so deep.
Mm-hmm.
none of those names might sound all that exciting at the end, but if they could, if you're talking about in 2 or 3 years, you might have an overflowing rotation of, you know, guys with number three upside.
And there's no reason to think that maybe they're not in on a, you know, re-signing Lance Lynn. You know, I know he's a free agent.
They're not. He's gone.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they're not even. Lance Lynn is one of my favorite players because you do interviews. Well, you know, I don't do, but you watch interviews with him, and he's a guy that'll tell you exactly how it is. He was asked numerous times, you know, how are negotiations with the Cardinals going, and he was kind of, what negotiations? They haven't even offered me a contract. Like, he blatantly comes out and says it like it is. And I'm gonna miss that guy because he's hilarious, but. You know, but he's going to be gone, and I think he's kind of underappreciated in his own right because besides Tommy John surgery, which wiped out a season, I mean, he doesn't really miss a start besides that. So yeah. He's a horse. The peripheral numbers for him scream to run the other way, so it's probably the right baseball move to let him go, but I still think he's dependable, and they're going to miss somebody like that because right now they have a lot of talent, but they're questionable talent with the rotation, so... Yep. But, you know, and they're also in the market for a big bat. Donaldson's name's floated out there. Obviously, I don't know, Stanton's out there. Any bat, you name it, they have the assets, whether financially or prospects, to pony up and pay the price. So, you know, they multitude of directions for this team.
All right, let's move on and talk about somebody else. Let's talk about Scott Kingery because he is a guy that people are really, really excited about. Should start the year either up with the major league club or up shortly, you know, within a few weeks of the start of the season. Between AAA and AA, hit 26 home runs and stole 29 bases with a 300-plus average over that time. What are your thoughts on Kingery for this year?
I'm a fan. I think he's got a plus hit tool. He knows how to use it, uses it at all fields. I think the power is going to be probably the average, but he's got to also supplements that by he's got plus speed for the position as well. I think he's got maybe a 2020 season or two in the bag. He's not going to settle into that long term, obviously, but I think he might be able to do that his third or fourth years in the major leagues or something like that. But he's a good defender. He's going to stick, and he's the kind of guy, man, never count this dude out. He was a walk-on at University of Arizona up until 2016. His whole college career, he hit 6 home runs. In his 2016 season in the minor leagues, he only hit 5 home runs. And then last year, he had 26. He really studied up, bought into the line. He calls it the line drive revolution because he doesn't try to hit the ball in the air. He says he just try to hit – or doesn't try to hit fly balls. He just tries to hit line drives, and he must have had the right mojo going because they all carried out of the yard for him this year. He was in Double A Reading, you know, it's a pretty friendly ballpark, but he went to Triple A Lehigh Valley, which is more neutral, and he still ripped it up over there. His cumulative minor league season, 304, 359, 530, with 26 homers and 29 stolen bases. Philadelphia with, you know, J.P. Crawford kind of forcing his way up in the middle. Michael Franco kind of, you know, the organization seems a little bit down on him. They love Freddie Galvis. They still have Cesar Hernandez, so it might be a little crowded. I do expect, you know, one of the Galvis or Hernandez, maybe they'll get moved to Boston to fill in for Pedroia with him being out. And I think there's a move to be made there, and I think Kingery, he's starting to get some work at third base toward the end of the year, so he didn't appear in any games there, but there was a lot of footage of him, you know, in Triple A. Taking ground balls at third base, him and J.P. Crawford. Crawford ended up playing third when he got called up. But I think Kingery is a last-round flyer for me in redraft leagues because I think he's so under the radar right now, and I think you can get some significant bang for your buck here because when he's up, he's going to play. He's going to hit near the top of the order, and he potentially could hit in front of a guy like Rhys Hoskins who, you know, you saw what he did last year. He's not going to repeat that, but he's going to be primed for a lot of RBIs. A lot of runs scored.
Yeah, I'm completely with you in all regards. I think this is like the perfect type of prospect I like to invest in a redraft league because there is no cost associated with him. I don't know if he even went in any of the mock drafts that I did. And I mean, we did, you know, I think 300 plus picks for each of those drafts. So, I mean, there's no cost associated with him. And I think he could come up fairly early and have a big impact because, you know, don't get me wrong, he said a lot of names, but there's no one really stopping him from taking over second base.
It was weird how they handled it because, you know, everyone knows J.P. Crawford. He's a good prospect in his own right. But not the
fantasy prospect that I think some people thought he would turn into.
No, he's a plus defensive shortstop. So where did the Phillies play him this year? And where is he eligible only at this year?
Oh, that's right. I didn't even think about
that. He doesn't even have shortstop eligibility. He has third base. He's going to get shortstop eventually.
Yeah, he'll get it. But even as a shortstop, he doesn't have a huge fantasy ceiling because he's never stolen the bases that people thought he would.
No.
He hasn't hit consistently for a great average. And so I think Crawford's one of those guys that first year after the draft, people were ranking him as like a top 20 prospect because, you know, sometimes, you know, fantasy prospect guys confuse real life prospect ratings with fantasy and not baking in the fact that defense, while it matters some, and I think it matters more than maybe people give credit for, it doesn't, there's no counting category for defense.
You know who, this cop sounds crazy now because we've seen how, I mean, this player I'm going to compare him to is only 25 in his own right. Plays the same, well, eventually the same future position, but I think J.P. Crawford could be like Xander Bogaerts. If everything breaks right. And you're talking, I'm talking more like 2017 with a 270 average, the 10 homers and 15 steals. I think
Bogaerts has an offensive upside that Crawford doesn't possess.
Absolutely, 100% correct on that. But I think it's within the realm of possibility. And I think you're right on that when you say it doesn't have the upside, but I think he's got the floor.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. All right, let's I want to talk about two more guys before we wrap up. So I'm going to jump around, maybe skip some guys. We'll move some of these guys over to next week and talk about them more in depth. But to me, an interesting guy is Lewis Brinson, because Brinson was one of the top prospects in the game, came up, struggled, and was sent back down for Milwaukee as Milwaukee tried to compete for a playoff spot and fell just short. I feel like he is a forgotten man in terms of leagues right now, and I think this is a really interesting buying opportunity. What are your thoughts on Lewis Brinson?
I love Brinson. If you remember, I was probably the high man that I saw on Brinson. As his call-up time, I had him as a top five prospect in the game, which I think is a tad higher than everyone else had him. A little disappointed in the early results, 17 strikeouts and 47 at-bats. 54 plate appearances, he struck out 17 times. Still flashed that power-speed combination. I still think he needs a Ryan Braun trade. Mm-hmm. And I think with the Brewers kind of being fake contenders last year, I think... Yeah, that's right, Chuck. I said that. Fake contenders. I think it's going to push Brinson down a little bit in the realm because I think they hold on to Braun now. And I think it makes the short-term vision for Brinson a lot more cloudy, but I do love him long-term. I think he's one of the most explosive athletes. I gave him a while back. I want to be careful how I word this. About Brinson, I said he had Mike Trout-level tools because he does. He's tooled. He's one of the most tooled-up prospects in the game. Obviously, he's not going to be Mike Trout because there isn't one. But I also think the Brewers kind of need to, if they're not going to hand him the center field job over Keon Broxton, because Broxton's a good defensive player, Broxton's a good player, you have to keep him in the major leagues, let him be your fourth outfielder, because there is no reason to send him to Colorado Springs again.
And let him just mash there.
Yeah, and one of the big concerns with Brinson is his plate approach. The improvement he's shown in this category is ridiculous throughout his career so far to this point. But if you're going to put him in an environment where anytime you hit the ball, it's going to fly, how is that going to help you be more selective?
It's not.
it's a bad environment for a guy with his. I mean, look at his numbers: 382, 387, 618 in 23 games, one walk. And then you look at 2017, 331, 400, 569. It was a little bit better, 32 walks. But as you can tell by that stat line, he has no reason to be in that league, in that park. There's none. Yeah. It's going to hurt his development. So he needs to either, you know, because Domingo Santana, I think, is one of the most underrated players in the game in right field. He's not going anywhere. Ryan Braun, obviously, is the guy that they should move, but I don't really think they're going to take a loss on that. And plus, like I said, they're kind of borderline contenders again this year. So that, how are you going to justify moving your number three hitter? And then, you know, Keon Broxton, who's a plus defensive center fielder with some pop. You know, maybe Broxton becomes the fourth outfielder and you start Brinson in center, but you got a little bit of a logjam there, and you got four pretty good players. I don't know what they're going to do. And you got Brett Phillips around too. Mm-hmm. If you're going to keep Brett Phillips up, he's the more, you know, the better prototypical fourth outfielder because he can play all around. You kind of want to let Brinson play every day because a guy with him, like Brinson with his approach and plate skills, is going to be prone to the ups and downs. He's going to slump a lot because he swings and misses so much. And a guy like that needs to play every day, so it's kind of rocking a hard place here.
I think this situation is begging for a trade, and it's either going to be they trade Brinson or they trade Braun. And, you know, maybe they could try to package Braun for, you know, a starting pitcher to come in. Yeah. I know they've been linked to Arrieta, but I just like
– I don't see the Brewers paying that freight.
And I don't see a guy like Arrieta wanting to go to a place like Milwaukee, which ratchets up your home runs, and that was the one kind of speed bump for Arrieta last year. Was his home runs went kind of up through the roof a little bit. So why would he go to a place that is going to make that worse? You know, when he could go to another team who's going to offer around the same amount of money, and he has a chance for another contract, you know, 4 years down the road.
Yeah, he's a tough player to peg for his destination too, by the way, Arrieta. But, I mean, yeah, Brinson, I think, and the thing with trading, with making a trade is you're not going to trade Brinson because right now you'd be selling it low.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole situation is, it's not nothing the Brewers did because, I mean, they were going for it as much as they could. But, you know, what do you do with Brinson now? Like I said, sending him a Triple A for me is pointless.
Yeah, I mean, he would be. I would think, you know, and like I'm just going to throw this as a hypothetical because it's just something that comes off the mind. The Giants have been strongly tied to Ryan Braun. Rumors in the past, they're in desperate need of a left fielder.
I can see that if they don't get Stanton, yeah.
You know, do the Giants, you know, say, you know, we can afford to trade Samardzija straight up for Ryan Braun or
that,
you know,
trade actually makes sense. But then again, if you're trading for Braun, you're not going to trade Samardzija because you need the pitching.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just throwing random stuff at the wall.
You.
I'm pretty sure Samardzija has a no trade clause, and I doubt he would agree to that as well. So, but I just, you know, something like of that ilk, you know, a team looking for an outfielder that maybe is a little pitching rich.
It would be the first time in team history, though, the Giants had a left fielder on PEDs, though. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's thanks a lot, buddy. I'm right there with you on Brinson. I think Brinson is a guy you go out and get right now because the value is way too low. And I think, like I said, people are overlooking him. He will be a guy I invest in some deeper mixed leagues and maybe even in an NL only as a guy I can reserve and just, you know, the ceiling is sky high.
Also, study up on Domingo Santana. I think everyone's missing the boat on him.
I don't think people are missing the boat. He's, I mean, his ADP was, 82nd overall.
Oh, okay.
So I think people are on board, and I'm one of them. I don't think – I don't think people are going to be sleeping on him very much. Let's finish out with Gleyber Torres, because Torres is a guy, again, a polarizing player coming off of a serious injury, supposedly going to challenge for the opening day third base job. I doubt he gets it right away.
He won't get it.
But I mean, he is. Cashman said they're going to let him challenge for it in spring training, which means they're expecting him to be healthy heading into that into next season. A lot of people think that this guy is a top 10 prospect. Are you one of them?
For fantasy, I think I have him 12th. I don't have my, you know, I'm kind of rebuilding my rankings as I go because I'm writing up all these prospects for each team right now. I haven't got to the Yankees yet. I'm doing it by draft order. But for me, Torres is an overrated fantasy prospect. And I say that because he's more Dansby Swanson than he is Ronald Acuna.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a slight on him. I just think, where's the standout tool? And I think I've learned a lot in how I evaluate players like that. Because if you don't have a standout tool, I don't want to say don't have much fantasy value, but I'll give me the standout tool over anything else.
Well, and I think one of the problems too is he's not going to be a shortstop.
No, not with them. Didi Gregorius is fantastic. Starlin Castro, even at second base, they don't really have a reason to replace him either.
Nope.
And Castro is crazy young, by the way. I think he's like 27. It feels like he's been around for 10 years. But Gleyber Torres, I think, and a lot of this too, is the Yankees are trying to stay underneath that luxury tax. So I think they're willing to give him, you know, he'll come up kind of on the same time when I was talking about with Acuna if he can prove he's healthy for a couple weeks and push Chase Headley, and he'll be the kind of roving utility infielder for them. Because remember, last year they were kind of messing with him at second base and third base as well as shortstop before he went got hurt. So he's got experience playing all those spots. It was his non-throwing elbow as well, so I'm not really concerned with his being able to come back or not, because he should be fine. But I think he was a little bit overrated to begin with. I think he's a guy that's going to hit 15 homers and probably 8 to 10 stolen bases right out of the, you know, first couple years. Eventually he can maybe evolve into 25 homer guy, but I'm not betting on that. Because number one, with the Yankees, if he's a 25 homer third baseman, I mean, put him in a pile with the other third baseman, right?
Well, I think if he can steal double digit bases or even 15 bags here,
but I don't think he will. As soon as he fills out to 25 homer guy, I think he's going to lose that speed.
I just don't think he is. Like you said, if he stays with the Yankees, it means he's not playing shortstop. They're loaded in the outfield, so he's not playing the outfield either. And so at third, he becomes a lot less sexy proposition.
100%.
And so to me, I think right now is the time to sell on Gleyber Torres. I think especially – or somewhere in his first year, because he's going to
have – I sold
him
last year before he got hurt.
Yeah, well, but he's going to have shortstop eligibility coming into this season. Because all sites will kind of just grant him where he's been playing, but he's going to lose that in year two. Because, you know, I mean, unless he somehow gets 20 games at short, which I just don't know if it'll happen, more than likely he's going to lose shortstop eligibility, and then he loses a ton of value. So I think 2018, whether it's before the start of the season or somewhere in the season, is the time to move him. For, you know, as part of a bigger deal to upgrade somewhere else. There isn't enough upside. I think he's going to be a really good real-life player.
100%. Yep.
And in OBP leagues, he's really, really sexy because, you know, he's been walking, you know, double-digit rates, and it's gotten better and better each year the last three seasons. So I think that... there's a lot to like, but I just think his value is capped at where he's going to be playing, unless for some reason they decide to move him.
Yeah, I don't think they will. Yeah, I think a good way to look at this is I think this year it's up in the air. Ultimately, I think this year he'll finish, you know, probably top 20 of whatever second or third base, whatever he's at. I think the year after that, he can probably bump him up to probably the bottom half of the top 15. Say he's at third base, about the 15th overall third baseman. And like, you know, talking about for the 2019, and then maybe after that, if he moves to second base or third base, I think ultimately he could eventually put up maybe top five at the position kind of seasons, but you're talking 3, 4, or 5 years down the road.
I mean, the only issue that with even that becomes, you know, I mean, 2019 is going to be a really interesting year in terms of free agents.
Yeah, there's a certain guy with Manny Machado that might end up in New York.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if, you know, if for some reason the Yankees decide, okay, we've cut payroll these last couple years, you know, maybe they, you know, they take a step back because no one expected them to be, you know, where they were this last year. You know, they'll have Chase Headley's $13 million coming off the books. They're going to have, you know, a number of other guys who, who've come off the books. And they go, okay, we can get back to old Yankee baseball. And we can start, you know, 2018 is the first year they're not paying Alex Rodriguez anymore. You know, that's $22 million or $21 million,
yep.
You know, that is come off. You know, and maybe that's when they start going, okay, now's the time we can start, you know, being our old Yankee selves and paying some of these guys. We're going to go out and get Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, you know, because they've already gone out
and
you know,
yeah,
Ohtani and, you know, or whoever it is, you know.
And if they do that, they're going to need guys like Torres around to offset the high cost because Torres will be making league minimum for 5 years.
Or they say we're going to trade him for, you know, the pieces we haven't been able to get through free agency.
Yeah, hypothetical trade out there right now. Who says no if the Yankees, you know, come to the Marlins with the package centered around Gleyber Torres for Marcell Ozuna? Who says no?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Yankees don't do it just because they're, like I said, they're loaded in the outfield.
They're prepping for, yeah, but I mean,
I mean, the most surprising thing for me is that the Yankees have not really been, you know, talked about as players for Stanton. You know,
they're trying to stay under the luxury tax, and that big money will push them over. Same for the Dodgers, and that's kind of why the Red Sox are hedging their bets right now because they don't want to go over the tax either.
Yeah, but they've got the prospects to have the Marlins pay some of that.
The Yankees do, yes.
Yeah, the Yankees do. Well, and the Dodgers do too.
Dodgers, yeah. Dodgers definitely do, but. You know, Torres is an interesting development because I think Torres is overrated for a multitude of things. Number one, he's a Cubs prospect. Number two, he was traded. Prospects that are traded always get a bump. And number three, he was traded to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a perfect storm of a little bit overrated. I do think the 70-hit tool is there. I think the power potential is above average. But again, he's not going to play shortstop. And his game doesn't stick out as a third baseman. And second base, there's no reason to move Castro. I'd be more interested in Gleyber Torres if he went to second base sooner rather than later. But I don't see that happening, like we said. And, you know, I just think Torres is going to be – he's going to be a really fun player to watch because he's Javi Baez without the extra mustard on defense. And I think, you know, that's fun to watch. And bat-to-ball skills are very nice and – like I told you earlier, I moved him last year. I moved him for Edwin Encarnacion when I was going for it. Straight up trade, one for one.
Mm-hmm.
I made that deal last year, and then the same week I made the deal, he popped his left elbow, which is good because he's a righty, but you know, he still don't want to do that. But I moved him last year, and I have no regrets because E5 is my window for 3 years, and he's not going away, so...
No, I mean, yeah, you definitely shouldn't be upset about that. I think that worked out fairly well for you.
Yeah, I almost won the league.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Matt, what are you working on? Where can people reach you at?
Prospect season, buddy. We're doing write-ups for every team. And you can reach me, MDTompFWFB. I'm always around. I'm always the one tweeting about Stanton because it seems like that's all I do nowadays. But
you and everybody else.
Yeah, it's we talked a little bit earlier. It's crazy out there.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can read all my stuff either at Fangraphs, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, or at Fantasy Alarm. You can hear me on this podcast and on the Tout Wars Hour on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific. Yeah, that's going to wrap us up. So for Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a happy Thanksgiving and a fantastic baseball offseason.
Happy belated birthday too, buddy.
Thanks. Getting old.